to Untangled Resolutions broadcast of The Problem is the Answer. I am your host, Batavi Levincombini, mediator and relationship coach, coming to you live from Harlem, USA. Summer is coming to the Northern Hemisphere, and that is when many people go on holiday. Vacations can present a wonderful chance for families, friends, and loved ones to spend time together. At the same time, nothing can test a relationship like a journey away from home. I want to be sure that you know how to prepare for your trip and maximize your experience. Today's show features world travelers and travel bloggers Shelley Roberts and Brian Peters. They will share their tricks and tips for planning the ultimate getaway on a budget and provide suggestions for making sure that you are healthy and happy when you get home. If the music sounds familiar, it is because I'm featuring Michelle Webb again this week, in light of our show's focus on travel to distant lands, and because we had issues with the broadcast last week, I'm featuring her again. This piece is called Istanbul, and it is from her CD titled DC Istanbul. So take a listen while we finish setting up. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us today. It's a really special day on the show. We celebrate two milestones today. Yesterday was my birthday. Yay! So I'm really happy this weekend. I'm celebrating my birthday, and I'm glad that you have joined me this week as I'm marking that particular milestone. Today also marks the 10th broadcast of The Problem is the Answer. So I would like to take a moment to say two sets of thank yous. First, to everyone who wished me happy birthday on Facebook and otherwise, you really made my day really special yesterday, and I feel truly blessed to have heard from so many of you.
Thank you all so much. That's really what made my day, was hearing from you yesterday. And some of you a little bit later, which means that the joy keeps on coming. So I'm happy to hear from you, even if it seems a little late. That's just fine. And then to all of you who have supported this show thus far, you know, it's the 10th broadcast, and I'm happy to say that it gets easier and better every time as the show is developing and as we're deciding what direction that the show is going in. Whatever the case is, I cannot do it without you. And it has been so gratifying to watch the listener numbers go up, and that inspires me to work harder and to try to put together shows that will really knock your socks off. So I'm especially grateful to my family, who has been here faithfully every week. My mom, who is my biggest cheerleader, who's done so much to rally the troops. And my dad, who provides great suggestions for how to improve the show. And my sister, who always makes sure that there is someone on the line. My brother, Jonathan, who chairs the chat room. And my other brother from another's mother, so to speak, Cyril, who co-chairs the chat room. They're in the chat room right now, who has also been here faithfully every week, and Ian Lynn, my brother out in Brooklyn, who has done so much to get the word out about the show and who really saved the show a couple of weeks ago when we covered Project Safe Surrender. He was really instrumental in making sure that show got off the ground. So thank you all so much. And last but not least, I thank each one of you who is listening right now. Thank you for joining me, and I ask that you invite more people to listen. The bigger the audience, the better the show can be. And in light of that, I'm also really happy to hear from you about your experience of the show, what you like, what you don't like, what you would like to hear. So send me an email, info@123untangle.com, or visit my website, www.123untangle.com, and send me your thoughts on the show. Suggest topics if you'd like, what it is that you'd like to hear about. I want to hear from you. If you're just joining the show, you are listening to Untangled Resolutions broadcast of The Problem is the Answer. Untangled Resolutions is a private practice in relationship coaching and divorce mediation. In mediation, you decide what fair is. Be your own judge. Settle your issues out of court. Contact me, and again, this is the information, info@123untangled.com. Or visit my website at www.123untangled.com to learn more about my practice and about what mediation can do for you and your family. Okay, so we're going to dive right into the show today. I am excited to present two special guests. Shell Roberts and Brian Peters are both world travelers and travel bloggers. And I'll be posting their information. In fact, I've posted their information in the chat room and also on Facebook for those of you who have that. And then we'll also give out the information during the broadcast so that you who are listening on demand will be able to access their blogs and the information that they have as well. I'm going to start with Shell Roberts, and I'm coming to you to turn on your mic so that you can be heard. You're on the air, hon. How you doing?
Hello, everyone. How are you? And thank you so much for having us or for having Brown Girls Fly represented on the show today.
Well, that's right. Your blog is called Brown Girls Fly. And tell me a bit about that. What inspired you to start the blog?
Absolutely. My sister and I, Crystal, have been traveling since we were kids. Our father was a pharmaceutical sales rep, and he, whenever he went on a business trip, he always found an excuse to take one of us, either my mom or one of the kids, and at least once a year we got to go someplace pretty interesting. As an entire family. And so we learned early on the value of, well, expense accounts and, but more particularly, frequent flyer miles, and how, you know, at the end of a year he could accumulate enough to take us someplace that cost us maybe what a road trip in region would cost, but we got to go to places all over the Caribbean. And so he planted a seed early on, and we realized over the years as we began to travel more and more as adults that we just didn't see a lot of people who looked like us on the road, and we began to wonder why. And so we decided to share as many tips and tricks as possible and try to inspire more travelers to do the same thing.
Wonderful. So your background, as you were saying, started really early, and what's really important that you've brought up, we'll be talking about later in the show, is figuring out how to fund a trip so that you stay within your budget and still, you know, have a really great time. Tell me a little bit about your travels. What trip can you tell me about that stands out especially for you?
That's hard for me because I think every trip I've taken has been particularly special. But I think I've had this desire to travel as an adult for a long time, and I always envisioned that I'd go with my girlfriends when we graduated from college and do all the things that I actually saw my peers on campus doing when we were in college. And my friends at the time weren't as interested. You know, so oh, why would I want to do that? Well, when my family gets here, I don't want to take off. I want to take them with me. And so in my 20s, I was pretty frustrated that I couldn't get anybody to want to go anywhere with me. And finally, I had an epiphany and decided I could go by myself. And so about 12 years ago, I had a trip that I'd always been interested in, and I had a friend in Northern California who invited me to come visit, and one of my college roommates was graduating from grad school down in L.A., and I decided to do a drive from San Francisco to L.A. along Pacific Coastal Highway number one. And it's
that's a beautiful drive. I'm sorry to jump in on you on that one, but I have to really say that's a gorgeous drive, and that's an excellent choice for a first trip.
It was absolutely gorgeous, and I had dreamt about it for a long time, and it was a great way to get my feet wet because I had traveled domestically on my own here and there for business trips to see family, obviously, but nothing with sort of a sense of adventure built in, and that was solely for the purpose of vacation. And so California happens to be one of my favorite regions of the country. It was absolutely gorgeous, and I met so many interesting people who were so supportive of my trip that something changed for me. And I began to travel all over the world shortly thereafter based on the confidence I got from that trip. So while I love all of my international travels and I have some amazing and sometimes very crazy stories about places I've been, I think that one is special to me because it started everything.
Right, right. And you've mentioned getting your feet wet, you know, finding a way to get your feet wet where, you know, you're still kind of domestic, but it's a fun trip. You know, that is away from home, of course. And so I think we'll talk a little bit about that, what folks can do to get their feet wet to begin with. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. I'm going to go ahead and bring Brian in on the call and chat with him for a second, and then we'll get started with the rest of the show. All right. So, Brian, you're on the air. How are you doing?
I am doing great. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. Thank you so much for being here. You know, I want to start out by telling folks the story of how you and I met, really. And I think that we've only actually met in person once, isn't it?
Twice. No, once. You're all right.
Yeah, I think it was once. you know, what happened is that Brian is on a listserv that I'm also on. And a couple of years ago, he took a round-the-world trip tour that started everything, and he'll tell you more about that trip. But at the beginning of the trip, he put up a message on this listserv telling people where he was going to go, inviting them to meet with him in whatever city it was that he was going to. But he also offered to pick up things. So, you know, whatever country he was going to, he said, if there's something that you want from there, go ahead and ask me, and I'll try to fulfill the wish if it's reasonable. So it happens that I take guitar lessons from this really awesome guy named Brandon Ross, fantastic musician, and really hot, too. I know he's not listening right now, so I'm not going to get in trouble by saying this, but he's really hot. But he's an excellent musician. He's going on tour with Cassandra Wilson next month, so I'm really fortunate to have him for a teacher, and I wanted his music. Now, his music actually is available for download in iTunes, and that's Brandon Ross, and the CDs are called Costume, and the other one is called Puppet. I've got a shameless plug in there. If you're interested in getting his music, it is available on iTunes. But I wasn't so interested in the digital downloads. I collect CDs from certain people, and I wanted the physical CDs. Now, for some distribution reason that I don't understand, Brandon's CDs are available, the hard copy, if you will, is available only in Japan. And it happened that the second country that Brian was going to was Japan. So I sent him an email and I said, hey, listen, you're going to Tokyo. Would you check out these CDs for me, see if you can find them. And, Brian, I'm going to turn to you if you can tell the story from there.
All right. So I got to Tokyo, and, again, you and I did not know each other except for sharing this listserv. So I said, okay, you know what, I'm going to go do it. So I walked around Tokyo for a couple of hours and went to record stores and actually had someone in my hostel write down, do you know this CD, and have it translated into Japanese in case I ran into a language barrier. But end of the story is that I ended up finding it. And when I came home from my round the world trip, you and I met up and I exchanged your CD for a dinner. So I think that was a fair trade.
Yeah, there was a fair trade involved. I told Brian that if he got me the CDs, I'd take him out for dinner, and we both fulfilled our parts of the bargain. And Brian,
yep.
Do you still have the pictures up there on your blog somewhere?
I do. They are still there.
Right. So we took pictures while we were there at dinner, and that's how we met. It's a great story of how Brian and I met. Brian, what inspired you to plan this trip? And it really was around the world.
It was. It was a complete circle around the world. And I had been in corporate America ever since I graduated from college. And, you know, I was really the opposite of Michelle in terms of travel. I really didn't start traveling until I was an adult because I thought that travel was not for me. It wasn't. It was for rich people. It was, you know, I had all these excuses in my head. And what really sparked me in terms of traveling was I had an ex-girlfriend who wanted to go to Brazil for her birthday. This is in 2006. And from there, I just really started loving travel. And the ex-girlfriend is gone, but the travel bug stayed with me. So I started taking group trips wherever I could go. So I went to Egypt. I went to Ghana, Costa Rica, all these group trips because I still wasn't comfortable going by myself. And then I think the last trip I took before my round the world trip was I led a group of people to Costa Rica, and then I said, you know, I can really do this. And then circumstances fell into place for this to happen. I was at my company for 8 years, and in February 2008, they called me in an office and said, Brian, you're a great worker, but we've got to let you go. We're going to give you 6 months' notice. Right. We're going to give you 6 months' notice. So I was going to be laid off the Friday before Labor Day 2008. So I had 6 months to think about what I was going to do with myself after I was laid off. And I said, you know what? I would really love to travel and see all the places that I always wanted to see. And so for those 6 months, I really spent my time coming into work, surfing the web, and planning my round-the-world trip. And when I was laid off on Labor Day, a week later I called up a ticket broker, and I figured out all the stops that I wanted to make, and I took up on my round-the-world trip the next month, October 2008, and I came back when I met you in 2009. So that was really the start of that. And then from that, I started the blog because I really wanted to have my family and friends know where I was and, you know, just keep my mom sort of calm about me traveling around the world by myself. So that was the real impetus for the blog to begin with. Then that branched out into me continuing the blog and then also me writing a book, which is also one of the things I always wanted to do. But I never had the spur to do it. But being around the world and then people keep asking me the same questions over and over, how'd you do it? How'd you save up? I said, you know what, let me put this all into a book because I always wanted to write a book and this seems like a great topic. And so it ended up me taking this trip, writing a book, continuing to write, continuing to blog, and then this just spurring a whole other life for myself. So really interesting.
And listen, for folks who are interested in the book, if you log in to Blog Talk Radio, so www.blogtalkradio.com/batabile, B-A-T-H-A-B-I-L-E. For those of you who are listening on the phone and are not perhaps already logged on to the website, if you go onto the website, you will see a link to, or a JPEG actually, of Brian's book. And I will put up information. If it's not already there, we'll get information about how you can get the book. But it's available through Amazon, isn't it?
Not on Amazon. This is completely self-published. So
oh.
Everything is on my blog. So all the information stayed with me and all the profits stayed with me also. So
on my blog,
right, it's a quick link right on the blog, and it's right at the top of the page, so you can't miss it.
Okay, so new directions, new instructions, folks. For the book, go to Brian's website. And what is the website, Brian?
It's nodebtworldtravel.com, nodebtworldtravel.com. And the whole reason is that when I came home, I planned on not having any debts on the trip, and that's how it worked out.
Wonderful. And so we're going to get into letting other folks know how you can do that. And so I'm inviting you both now to sort of chime in. And I'm thinking, let's start at the beginning. When it comes to planning a trip, just picking a destination, for example, what kinds of things do you think people should be considering when they start to plan their trip?
I'll just start off real quick. I think when planning the trip, even shorter trips, I think that people need to get over the fear that it's out of their budget. That's the first thing, because I think that stops many people from traveling to begin with. And then really, sometimes it's just deciding where to go, you know, because there's so many options. You can really be anywhere on the planet within 24 hours. So people just need to really decide, hey, I'm going to take this trip and I'm going to go. And I think Shell alluded to this earlier. A lot of that is, especially for women, it's a feeling of safety when they travel. They want to have someone with them. But I always tell people, especially women, that if you're waiting around for someone to go with you, you may be waiting forever. So I just say get up and go, get your passport, and get up and go.
Well, right. So let me bring Shell into it. In your travels, what have you found to, you know, have been important to consider about safety?
Sure. I think research makes the world a difference. If you really people tell their stories of things that have happened when they've traveled before. Locals have an opinion. Staying abreast of kind of what's happening in global news. So just getting a sense of, okay, here's where I'm going and here are what potential risks might be to me as a North American traveling, to me as a female traveling, to me as someone of my age or my cultural background, and just being aware of that. So I'll give you an example. For instance, in Barcelona, the pickpocketing is elevated to an art like no other. And in fact, if you read all of the stories, you might be terrified and never want to travel there, and it's an absolutely amazing city. But I think one idea related to that is to understand, you know, there are sites out there that have actually chronicled in detail there's every single scam someone has ever tried on a local or a visitor to Barcelona.
But what's that link? Do you have it for...
I can share it offline. I don't have it off the top of my head. It's in my shortcuts.
Okay. But there's a website that people can go to that basically educates them about the scams that are done. You were saying in Barcelona?
Exactly. And Barcelona is just an example, but there are many resources available on the web. And I think my point really is if you do a little research, you can become comfortable with, okay, these are things that happen. Okay, it's not the end of the world if somebody pickpockets me. In fact, I'll just assume I'm going to get pickpocketed and put money in a few different places so that if they do hit me, I'll lose $10, but I won't lose everything in my passport. And so just becoming familiar with what the risks are and when to recognize that something's happening around you and getting a sense of self-awareness and then how you'll respond if those situations happen. And so... kind of arming yourself with information is very key. And then I think secondly, having a sense of if you're going to a place that has a different language or different culture, understanding how women are perceived in that culture, understanding how to, you know, call for help, look for police. You know, where do you go when you're worried about your safety and how to manage that in a new culture. And not that I have to say I've traveled to 5 continents and have never been afraid for my safety in any significant way. There are always subtle things that you have to be cautious of, but I think part of that confidence has come from just kind of collecting information and becoming knowledgeable and talking to locals and gathering as much of that as possible.
So You want to be careful, you want to be cautious, but you don't want to be petrified.
Exactly. Exactly.
Very true. Very true. Very true. I think that a prepared mind is a very calm mind, and if you go into a new environment knowing what to expect or knowing to look out for this, or you know, just having a general sense or general well-being, you'll feel better about being in that environment, and you can enjoy your trip a lot better. So, and you know what, the internet has made travel so much more easy to plan, easy to get familiar with the environment. I mean, you can go online and, you know, look at other travels, what they've done. You can see videos of your location. You can go on Google Maps and look at your hotel before you get there. I mean, it really makes travel a lot easier, and it should make travelers feel a lot safer and a lot calmer when they travel, so that they can actually enjoy their trip as opposed to worrying about all these bad things that might happen that, for the most part, will never happen.
Right, and one of those resources,
exactly,
of course, is your blogs. So, Shell, if you could give the URL for your blog. I don't know if we got that out on the air.
Oh, absolutely. We're Brown Girls Fly, so our web address is www.browngirlsfly.com. And
great.
We're on Facebook and Twitter and YouTube, so check us out.
Wonderful.
I wanted to say something briefly to build on what Brian was just saying in terms of planning and safety. And I absolutely agree with him that a kind of prepared mind is a calm mind. And I think I just want to hit home that's just it's not about sort of scaring yourself into, oh, what am I going to do, but really just understanding what you need to look out for. And I'm babbling right now because I just lost my thought. I was actually going to build on what Brian said, and I find myself just repeating it. So I'll hold the thought. I'm sure we're going to come back to talking in general about solo travel and things to look out for, and I'll share that as the conversation continues.
Absolutely. Anytime it comes back to you, bring it back up, because I'm sure that whatever it is, it was really important. So we've talked a little bit about safety, and that issue might come up. So for folks who are listening who have questions arising from what you've heard from Shell and from Brian, please feel free to call in to the show. And the number to call is 818-532-9789. If you want to be put on the air and ask your question, you hit the number 1, and that will give me a signal letting me know that you want to be on the air. Another way to get your question answered is to join the chat room. So when you go to the website for the show, blogtalkradio.com/batabile, you will see there a link that says, do you want to join the chat room? For those of you who are coming for the first time, you may have to set up a user profile, or you will have to set up a user profile. That's a one-time activity for you. You can use a pseudonym. You can use a pseudonym. You don't have to use your real name. So that you can be anonymous if you want to be. But come into the chat room. We've got folks who are there who will gather your questions, and we'll try to keep track of it. Both Brian and Shell, are you in the chat room?
I'm in the chat room.
Brian's in the chat room. Okay, so Brian is...
I'm not, but I will join.
Okay, so Brian and Shell will both be in the chat room and are available to answer your questions there as well. So those are two ways that you can get your questions asked, but feel free to call in so that we can have a sort of back and forth. All right, so we've talked a little bit about safety. How about we talk money? You both brought up the issue of feeling that, initially traveling wasn't for you because it's something that's kind of expensive, it's for wealthy people, and yet you overcame that somehow. So talk to me a bit about money. Shell, go ahead.
You want to go first, Shell?
Let's
start with Shell.
I think this even goes back to where we began, which is in terms of planning. Even before you think about what trip you want to go on, a tip that my sister and I have used is to set aside a travel budget. Even if you can only deposit $25 a month, having a stash that is devoted to travel really helps you have some flexibility when you see a deal. I think part of our problem is we often go, okay, it's summertime, I'm supposed to take my holiday at summer or at Christmas, and I have a few days off and I want to go to insert place here. And so that's great, but it often means that you're tied to whatever the prices are during that time. And oftentimes, the times we want to travel, summer, holidays, are more expensive periods for traveling. And so what we like to do is to pool our money, set it aside, and the second we see a deal, if we can fit it into our schedule, we just go. And then we end up, you know, oftentimes saving 30 to 50% on prices simply because we were flexible enough to follow a deal instead of kind of doing it the other way around, where we were trying to wedge a trip into a tight schedule.
That's great advice. Brian, thank you so much, Shel. Brian, what can you tell me about money?
Oh, gosh. Where can I begin here? The first thing is, first, people really think about where they're going to stay when they travel, and that's a big deal nowadays because hotel rooms, especially if you go to, you know, a big metropolitan city, can be at least $200 a pop. So there are a couple things here. On my round-the-world trip, what I did is I stayed in hostels. And before you say, oh, my goodness, hostels are for kids, hostels are for college students, blah, 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 I am in my 30s. I'll admit that. But hostels were fine. And that's how I was able to stay and travel for so long without blowing my entire budget. And hostels can be, you know, I was in Bangkok for 2-3 weeks, and I spent $10 a night in great hostel shared rooms. You can also get private rooms in hostels, which many people don't know. So you can have your own bed and bath and not have to interact with anyone if you don't want to. Hostels are not that big in the States. They're getting there. There's actually an article today in the New York Daily News about hostels here in New York City. So hostels are sort of picking up speed, at least stateside, but they're very popular in Europe, very popular in Asia, and pretty much very popular everywhere else.
Okay.
The other thing I would recommend.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say the other thing I would recommend is a lot of people now. Okay, they're doing couch surfing, which for those of you who don't know, couch surfing is you put up a profile online, you talk to people, and you literally sleep on their couches potentially for a couple of days or maybe even a week, depending on how you arrange that. Some people are not comfortable with that. The next biggest thing that people are recommending now is to actually rent an apartment or a house. And this is especially good if you have a large group. Let's say you have a family of five, or even if you're a couple, or even if you're solo. Renting an apartment or a house could be a lot more cost-effective than being jammed into a hotel room for $200, $300 a night. You may have a cheaper price for that apartment or hotel, and then you also have more room, and then you can also live in a neighborhood. You can live in a residential neighborhood and get a different feel for a city, a country, as opposed to being on the tourist track. That a hotel would be. So,
do you mind if I?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to. I was going to say I wanted to throw an example out there really quickly before you moved on to your next point. And we did that several years ago. I had a business trip to Barcelona, and I was going to take a few personal days before and after the trip. So I said to my family, "Hey, look, if you guys can get yourself to Europe, I can." You know, we can find a place to stay that's no additional cost to my company, and you can stay with me. And there was – I didn't have to be in a specific, you know, hotel for the event that I was working. So that's exactly what we did. We found a condo that was in an apartment building. So several of them were rented to visitors, but the other half of the building was locals. And we had a three-bedroom apartment, I think 1, 2, 3, 4 – four twin beds and a queen-size bed were in the unit, a living room, a kitchen. And it not only was a great way to save money on lodging, but breakfast is not the kind of meal that most people find very cultural. You know, we sort of eat – most places eat some type of pastry, some type of eggs, some type of meat for breakfast. It's normally lunch and dinner that you want to try tapas or the local fare. And so not having to go out – to a restaurant to eat breakfast when you can just buy baguettes and cheese and some fruit at a tenth of the price really saved our group a lot of money. So it was so positive. I just wanted to insert that example to say we know from personal experience that that's a great idea.
So I want to ask a question, if I can jump in there for a second, both to Shell and Brian. Shell, because you've done this, and Brian, you've mentioned it. When it comes to renting a condo or an apartment or something like that, are we talking about more extended trips, Brian?
No, not even. We're talking about a weekend, a week. It really depends. And, you know, you can find your time frame and a lot of these sites. One big one is Airbnb, as in B, Nancy, B as in boy. Airbnb is a very big one. And, you know, these time frames are not for the round-the-world traveler who's staying in a particular country for a month. This can be for a weekend. This can be for a week. Because you have homeowners, especially with the real estate market crash over the past few years, you have a glut of properties and homes and homeowners who need help paying their mortgages. And this is sort of where this whole industry came out of. Now, you have a lot of cities that are trying to restrict this because you have homeowners who are, you know, trying to, you know, get mortgage payments done, but then you have landowners who are saying, well, this is not really legal, and, you know, people are trying to work around it. But for many places, this is still, you know, perfectly fine to do. And if you look up, you know, apartment rentals, home rentals online, you'll be able to find something that can fit any time frame.
You know, I've also heard of people exchanging their homes. What can you tell us about that?
Done myself, but they are out there, and, you know, it's the same concept. Basically, you would put your home up online, and if the times can correspond, then let's say you're in New York and someone's in Paris, then you can swap homes, or Chicago and London, or, you know, L.A. and Thailand, wherever you want to be. All you got to do is just put your information out there, and then someone can say, hey, I want to be in your city at this time. And it doesn't even have to be at the same exact time. If you can work out an arrangement where someone can be in your place when you're not there and vice versa. So, again, all these options are out there. It's just a matter of putting your information out there and then waiting for the responses.
So in terms of saving money on travel, you folks are getting really creative. This is great. My understanding, then, is that flexibility is really important. So having a budget, having money saved away so that you can quickly snap up a deal when it comes on, staying in hostels, which is not as unattractive as most people might consider them to be, especially since you can also get private rooms in a hostel if you'd like. You talked about couch surfing, renting an apartment or a house or a condo, and then also there's this issue of exchanges. So you've brought up a number of ways that folks can creatively save money on lodging when they are traveling. Shell, you kind of broached the topic of buying tickets when you talked about being flexible and grabbing the good deals. I'm thinking that listeners are interested in knowing where to look for those deals. What can you tell us about that?
Excellent. Before we switch gears, I just wanted to answer one of your earlier questions about the time frames for apartment rentals.
Sure.
I completely agree with what we've talked about earlier, but there's one thing to be careful about. Most of the places will charge a cleaning fee. Which it typically runs about $50 to $75 to clean the unit at the end of your stay, or if you're going to stay there for 2 weeks, they'll do it once a week. So for a one-night stay, even though the unit price might be much cheaper than a hotel, by the time you add the cleaning fee, it's probably not as wise for a one-night stay. It ends up you start breaking even around 3 days, and you start saving more significantly at the 4 to 7 day mark. So that's not always the case. Some people don't, they build the price in, and but it's just something to look out for when you are going to pursue a condo rental or apartment house rental.
That's great to know. Okay, wonderful.
So going to your question about tickets, aha. So there are several options for tickets. I mean, I think everyone's familiar with kind of kayaking, and generally the style for looking for tickets in that case is...
Actually, I have no idea what kayaking is.
Oh, sorry. Kayak is a website. I probably should have said not ING on the end.
Okay.
www.kayak.com. It's an aggregator website that allows you to search for hotels, rental cars, airfare, et cetera. and maybe even package deals. So it's about a standard website. You have dates in mind, and you have a location in mind, and then you look for it, and you book the cheapest one generally. And so while that's still an option, there are a couple other things to look out for. So, for instance, there are websites that, Travelocity.com has a fare watcher tool. So if you know, I just want to go to Mexico in the spring. I'm not really specific on what week, what month even. And I see the prices are kind of bouncing around, so I just want to know when the prices drop. And you can set a filter that says, send me an email anytime the price drops below a certain number or anytime it drops by a certain amount. So you can say, send me an email when it hits $400 or send me an email when the price drops $25 less than where it is today.
Oh, that's cool.
And so it's a really cool way to keep your eye out on things. So using fare watching tools is one tip. There's another tip. There are forum groups out there for avid travelers. I do admit that they're a bit of a time sink. You have to kind of want to log in and check the pages every day and see what people are talking about. But one of those is FlyerTalk.com, and there are several more out there. But people who are traveling often stumble on good deals and then they share them. Split Deals is also one, and they'll share those deals. And so if you see a great fare pop up, then it's a great chance to jump on it. And so seeing what other travelers are doing, watching deals, doing the traditional searches, and then I think another way to save on airfare is to use frequent flyer points. And I know generally you say you have to fly to be able to take advantage of frequent flyer points, but there are so many ways to accrue frequent flyer miles without ever getting on a plane. Every one of the airlines runs promos throughout the year. So, for instance, US Air does one. And for the past 2 years, for doing things like going to restaurants that I was probably already going to eat in, focusing my online shopping with some strategic partners that they were giving sort of mega bonus points for, I think I earned somewhere between 50 to 70,000 points, which is enough for two and a half to three domestic trips or at least one European
thousand,
flight. Like,
70,000 points?
Yeah, and so maybe it was about $300 out of pocket, but again, it wasn't wasted money. It was food, meals that I was eating, things that I needed to purchase already online, maybe setting up a bank account. So you take the extra effort to move your money from one savings account into another, but you get 25,000 points off of it. So just sort of strategically doing a handful of activities with non-travel partners. The airlines are trying to kind of leverage those marketing partnerships, and they're rewarding people with points for doing those things. I would never say just throw $300 to get some points because you could go buy a ticket. But if it's with activities that you're already doing, and that cash that you've spent is actually to receive other products and services, and the points are just a bonus on top of that, then it's absolutely worth the extra effort. And so there's tons of ways to, and even when they aren't running promos, if you go through their links to buy your books and buy things from Amazon and other places like that, if you make sure you have a debit card or a credit card that's point accruing, just in the process of living, in the course of a month, you could earn 1,000 to 2,000 points just on doing things like paying your mortgage or your rent, grocery shopping, online purchases. They reward you for just living. And so
I wanted to actually jump in here for a second to let you know, because I just popped over to Brian's website and I see that you actually have a video there, Brian, about how to gain more frequent flyer points. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, every week I post up a set of links for the travel news of the weekend. Last week there was a link about exactly what Shell was talking about frequent flyer miles, and it was something that I wished I knew about before I started my round-the-world trip, because I was not part of a frequent flyer plan when I traveled, and that's 30,000 miles around the earth. So, but essentially what you do is, there are other ways, and like Shell was saying, you sign up for credit cards, you sign up for certain services and you gain points. Actually, right now, British Airways just came out with a special for their credit card, for their branded credit card with Visa, that gives you, I think it's 100,000 miles just for signing up, and then another 100,000 miles if you charge $2,500 within 3 months. And so these are the types of things that airlines try to do to lock you in so that you will use their airlines as opposed to any other airline more frequently. Now, obviously, you have to charge a certain amount and you have to fly a certain airline, but, you know, it's mutually beneficial if you can do that. And, you know, Shell can definitely talk about that more. But getting back to the main point, the frequent flyer miles are not just credit cards, but there are other services. And, if, you know, if you have a favorite airline, if you fly American all the time, if you fly Delta, or if a certain airline is near you, near your hub, out of Dallas, it would be American, out of New York, you know, JFK or LaGuardia, JetBlue, their airline generally has some type of frequent flyer mile. And if you sign up for it and just go through the process and read all the fine print, because sometimes you can lose those miles if you don't do exactly what they say, but you can really get a lot of, you know, not only free trips, but they also give you access to their lounges. They give you, you know, merchandise, cash back. So the frequent flyer miles are really sort of taking off even more now, because people are trying to figure out ways to get around all the baggage fees, you know, the high prices, anything that people can do to get around there, they're trying. So definitely the frequent flyer miles.
Fantastic.
And to build on what Brian just said, he's absolutely right about the perks of being sort of a frequent traveler with an airline. The level of customer service that used to be available for free to everyone is now sort of reserved for the more elite customers. And, you know, there are, if you can try to earn that status even without traveling at the level of a, you know, a frequent business traveler, the perks are just, you know, the access to the lounges is part of that, but things that can save you money, like he was just saying, in terms of baggage, but also things like you can change your flights without standby fees. They're generally much more flexible, so if you miss a flight and you get to the airport and you're sort of in crisis, instead of getting the "we can't help you" scowl, they're often much more flexible. So there are a set of sort of non-financial benefits or non more intangible benefits, I think, that that come along with frequent flying or having the status, at least. And then, but what's interesting to me is, and I've learned this having had the chance to sort of travel for business, but then also want to hoard all of my earnings to help maximize my personal traveling on my own at the lowest cost possible, is a lot of folks who are not business travelers just assume, "Oh, I don't need an account for that. Oh, I flew, but I didn't even make the time to add my
points."
Right. And it is such you don't realize it's there's this concept out there that's called like snowflaking, and the idea is that in order to make a snowball, it starts with snowflakes, and snowflakes accumulate, and you know, then you have 22 inches of snow like we had here in Chicago. And so the idea is that if you catch every single snowflake, if you do all these little small tasks, there will become a point where it's critical mass and you have something worth paying attention to. But if you dismiss it because you think a snowflake on its own is insignificant, then you lose that chance on the longer run to benefit. And I think that's the mistake that many of us make. You know,
so
you
being
think
smart
the
about putting together all of these little things is
exactly
important. Make sure that you don't lose out on those small opportunities that seem to be just, you know, nothing on their own, because when you put them together, you can come up with something really significant, like a round-the-world trip. You know, thank you so much. I'm going to need to take a break in just a moment, but I want to summarize that we have talked a bit about where to look for deals. And so there are a number of websites that were mentioned, but that Shell and Brian both mentioned. So, you know, if you want to back up and listen again on the show, you can jot those down. And I'll ask them to put the URLs up in the chat room for those of you who are in the chat room, if you guys can do that. In the meanwhile, while we have the break, I'm sorry to have to sort of cut this part of the conversation short, but I do need to take a little bit of a break. We're going to listen to Michelle Webb again. This is from her CD called DC Istanbul, and the song or the piece is called Rope Dojo. We'll be back in just a moment. All right, welcome back to the show. Thank you for listening, everyone. If you are just joining us, you are listening to Untangled Resolutions broadcast of The Problem is the Answer. And today we are featuring travel as the topic of the day. And we will be getting into how your relationships can be impacted by travel. But right now I'm talking with my guests, Shell Roberts and Brian Peters, who are world travelers and travel bloggers, who are giving us lots of valuable information about budgeting for trips and other tips that will be very helpful for those of you who are planning getaways. Before we get back to the show, I have a couple of announcements for you. First, Project Safe Surrender. If you remember, a couple of weeks ago, we did a show that was called Police in the Church, and we talked with folks who are part of Project Safe Surrender, and that is an opportunity for people who are in New York City who have received C summonses. And so these are summonses for things like open beer cans and not walking your dog on a leash and doing other things of that nature. If you have a C summons, you should know that you have one. For folks who have missed their court dates, they might suddenly find themselves the subject of a warrant for their arrest. The judge can issue a bench warrant. And so if you are in that situation, you have an opportunity on April 22nd and also on April 23rd to go to the Antioch Baptist Church in Brooklyn. That's 823 Green Avenue in Brooklyn. There will be over 300 volunteers expected to be there, so it's a big project. And you can go there to have a judge hear your case. And people who come in will be given favorable consideration, and they also get to go through the process with the help of a volunteer. So somebody will be there to guide you through the process. For more information about Project Safe Surrender, please visit their website. That is at projectsafesurrender2011.org. So it's projectsafesurrender2011.org. And the information that you need to contact somebody who can help you with more information is there on the show. Also, if you're interested in hearing more about the show and perhaps finding out about participating or volunteering, listen to the show. If you're interested in Project Safe Surrender, listen to the show, Police in the Church, that you'll find there on demand. It's available on the website on demand. Untangled Resolutions presents The Problem is the Answer, and that's what you're listening to right now. And it's brought to you by Untangled Resolutions, a private practice in relationship coaching and divorce mediation. In mediation, you decide what fair is. Settle your issues out of court where you are the judge. Contact me at info@123untangled.com or visit my website, www.123untangled.com, to learn more about my practice and about what mediation could do for you and your family. And if you're wondering who I am Batabile Mtumpany. I am a JD, but I have chosen to focus on mediation rather than litigation. So I welcome any questions that you might have about that. Please go ahead and send me a message. All right, we're going to come back to the show, and I'm going to bring my guests back on the line. Let me make sure I've got the right people here as I'm unmuting their microphones. Shell, you there?
Yep, I'm here.
Wonderful. Brian?
I am here.
Awesome. We are both back. Listen, folks, we focus on this show on relationships a lot. We talk about relationships from a really broad perspective. So sometimes it's about community relationships. Sometimes it's about romantic relationships or family relationships. When it comes to traveling, if you're traveling with other people, relationships can become quite an issue. And so I'd like to talk a little bit about the kinds of things that folks can consider when they are traveling with people. And Shell, let me start with you. What have you found to be important as you have traveled with friends and family?
I think it starts with knowing yourself and having a really honest conversation with yourself first and knowing sort of what are your must-haves when you travel and what are your quirks, I guess. So if you're a big snorer, you should know that. Or if you can't sleep when someone else is snoring, it'll be tough to share a room. Or if you're definitely the adventure type, who needs to go, then traveling with someone who's more of a just sit back and soak it all in type of person may be more difficult. So I found that first understanding yourself is really helpful, because then you can have a really open, non-threatening conversation with your friends about kind of what you're expecting and what you're looking for, and then you guys can find compromises together and make a trip that accommodates both of you.
Well, you were talking about things that are really basic that I wouldn't have thought about. For example, you know, talking about snoring and talking about the pace at which you want to explore a city. What else is on your list of things to consider, Shell?
Sure. I actually think going back to basics, it can make or break a trip. Even things about sort of expectations when you're on a trip. Sometimes people want to meet someone of the opposite sex and, you know, have a fling while they're gone. And I think knowing expectations in terms of, okay, is that something the other travel partner is okay with? Can you bring them back to the room? Like, just having kind of expectations about that. Things like, if you're a photographer, the non-photographer in the group will probably want to shoot you if you drag them from place to place to place and then stand and focus on some really architectural detail or some flower, you know, when they just want to look at life in sort of broader strokes. And so I think those as well are on my list, sort of relationship expectations as well as sort of your quirky habits, if you will.
Right. And for folks who are interested in learning more, Shell actually has been so kind as to contribute an article to my e-zine. So Untangled Resolutions also publishes an e-zine, which should be coming out this Friday. And if you're interested in reading more, then you can visit the website, and the e-zine will be available there on the website. Also, for those of you who are on Facebook, I will be putting up a reminder once the e-zine is published so that you can hop on over there and read the article about that. It's really interesting, actually, the list of things that she mentions that I hadn't given a thought to. But when it comes down to it, when you're traveling abroad and, you know, you're not having easy access to the comforts of home, things that you might otherwise have brushed off could really annoy you and end up really severely impacting your trip. Brian, Shell, if you don't mind, I'm going to turn to Brian for a second and ask for your input on this topic.
I'd say the biggest thing is compromise. And I say that only because on my round the world, I was solo for 95% of the trip until my last couple of weeks. I had a friend come over, and we hit London, Barcelona, and Marrakesh together. And what I discovered is that I didn't know this person that long. She was just someone who had followed me on the blog, and I knew her from mutual friends. And I said, hey, you know a lot about travel. Why don't you come on over and join me? And that's how we ended up traveling for about 2 weeks. And what I discovered during that is that, you know, we figured out beforehand, hey, we're going to do X, Y, and Z. What do we need to do when we're there? You know, I really didn't talk to her about, you know, her likes and dislikes. We sort of blended together, and we sort of figured out what we were going to do. So I think it really is a matter of compromise. So if you're a type A personality who needs to have their way all the time, then traveling with someone else may not be for you. Now, obviously, that may not be something that's practical. You may have to travel with someone for whatever reason. But for your own, you know, leisure travel, if you're the type of person who needs to have it this way and this way only, then, you know, I think maybe you should travel by yourself, because traveling with another person or with the group does require some compromise. I think the only way that everyone's going to be happy is if everyone can get their way a little bit at a time. So, compromise.
So what I'm hearing then is consensus from both of you is knowing yourself, knowing your likes and your dislikes, your preferences, is really important, and then, you know, making a list of issues to deal with. It looks like we actually have a caller on the line in the 909 area code, so I'm going to go ahead and bring in the caller and see if you have a question for Shell and for Brian. Caller, you're on the air, 909 area code.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Well, you're very welcome. Welcome to the show.
Thanks. I think you might have gone past it a little bit, but I was wondering, when you're traveling with a group of people, is it better to try and get a group rate directly from the airline, or is it better to try and get a discount online?
Great question.
You mean, I was going to say, you mean get a discount for yourself online, or... Because many times when you're traveling as a group, the group rate would include the airfare, and so you may get the best rate through the group. Now, I know in some circumstances you can try to get, like Shell was saying earlier, you can try to get the frequent flyer miles attached to the group, but sometimes that doesn't work out. But if you're traveling as a group, the hotel, the airfare, a lot of times that's all packaged together, and that may be the best way that you get the best rate for everything combined.
Actually, Brian, I think that the caller might be referring to a situation where the group is arranging the travel themselves, so it's not like you're going on a tour or something like that.
Oh, okay, so each person is doing this themselves individually.
Well, no, not necessarily. So let's say you've got a group of 10 friends, and you decide
okay.
You all want to take a trip together. You want
mm-hmm.
to take advantage of you know, the buying power that comes from buying as a group. Would it be better
mm-hmm.
to buy a bulk of tickets from the airline or to buy online? Or is there something else?
Absolutely. You should try to contact the airline first and say, hey, we have 10 people who are going to take up, you know, 3 rows of your aircraft. What kind of discount we can get? All they can do is say no. It can never hurt to ask.
So it's better to go directly to the airline? Like, you're not, there's nothing online that you can find that's better?
Shell, you may want to jump in here, but I don't know of anything personally online. Usually when you get into groups, it's better to talk to a human being, because online is generally, you know, for singles or couples, or it's not very, you know, complicated. Once you get into three or four or five people, then it's better to talk to a human being, either the airline directly or to a travel agent.
Okay. Yeah, I think I might agree that that once you have a large enough group size, that there's planning benefits. Even if you don't go with the airline directly, you might find a travel agent who is willing to work with you and actually not just quote you an easy rate, but to help dig for the cheapest thing they can find for you. But also, as Brian was saying, oftentimes there's a discount. I found, and I have talked to some travel agents, and I learned that with hotels and things like that, they can often get discounts and that there's a commission built into it, so they can kind of play around with what the final cost is. But that in many cases with airlines, the best they can do is pass on the rate that the airline already has. So what that says in general is when you're out looking for prices online, all you're doing is trying to find the cheapest thing that the airline already has. Like another company or agency can't go any lower than the airline's lowest price in practice.
So airline directly seems to be the best bet.
Yes.
Okay. Caller, did that answer your question?
Yeah, it did. Thanks so much.
You're very welcome, and thanks for calling into the show. All right, so that was a great question about, you know, planning a group trip on your own where you're not going with a tour agency that already has a package deal, but you're trying to put together your own packages. You know, folks are finding different ways to be creative about that, and so you addressed that that question very well. Is there anything more you wanted to add, either Shell or Brian?
I just want to backtrack for a second about the airfares, because that's what people are really worried about now in terms of gas prices going up and baggage fees and, you know, charging for, you know, pillows and blankets and all of this ridiculousness for the airlines. First of all, and Shell, I know you have some favorite websites that you like to use, and you alluded to Kayak earlier. Some of the others that are really highly recommended right now for looking for airfares, one is called Momondo, M-O-M-O-N-D-O, Momondo.com. Another one is Hipmonk, H-I-P-M-O-N-K, Hipmonk.com. And really, we talked about flexibility earlier. What you really want to do when you're looking for an airfare is to give yourself a little, you know, a little gap. So don't be stuck on leaving on Sunday and coming back on Saturday. And actually, those are the two worst days to try to fly out or fly on, because those are generally the most expensive. You want to try to leave on like a Tuesday or Wednesday, and those are the best travel days, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, because, you know, everyone's trying to come back for work, you know, Sunday, Monday, so those are the worst days. Also try to take the red-eye flights, and the red-eyes means that you're generally sleeping on the flight. Those are generally cheaper also. So when you look at these websites, you want to give yourself, let's say, you know, 3 days from your expected date and 3 days beforehand just to see and compare prices. And, again, this is where the Internet is so important, because you can compare prices so easily now. And, I mean, you can have a $200, $300 difference between, let's say, the Sunday of the week versus, you know, going 2 days forward and leaving on Tuesday or Wednesday. So that's one thing. And then very quickly, one thing close to my heart, obviously, is round-the-world travel. And, you know, when I was planning my trip, I thought that round-the-world travel was really expensive. I was like, oh, this is only for rich people. How can I do this? A round-the-world ticket, depending on your stops, let's say 5 or 6 stops, can be $2,000, $2,000 even.
Wow.
So, you know, if you don't buy Starbucks for a year, you can afford a round-the-world trip.
Wow.
And I think that's the reason why I sort of wrote my book, and why, you know, Shell and I are on your show today, because we want to explain to people that travel does not have to be expensive. I think people get put off by the idea in their head that it is expensive and they don't do the research. So a round-the-world ticket can cost $2,000, $2,500, and you do a full circle of the world. You know, let's say you start in New York, you hit London, you go to Mumbai, you go to Sydney, you go to Hawaii, and then you're back in L.A., and then you're back to New York. That could be a $25 a ticket, and then you do all your little stops in between. So don't be intimidated by thinking, well, I'm traveling the entire world, it's going to be $20,000. Far from it.
Okay. Okay. Well, you talked about going around the world. And if you don't mind, we can shift a little bit. I think I heard Shell might have been coming in. If there's something that you wanted to add to that, please go ahead. But I do want us to make sure to talk about certain kinds of logistics, documentation, for example, visas and that sort of thing. What do people need to know about the bureaucratic side of doing this kind of travel? Shell?
So specifically around the world, I was just going to say that in frequent flyer miles, it's about 200,000 points to get a round-the-world ticket with six stops in coach. So I just to give you a comparison point on miles as well as cost.
And you talked earlier, actually, about being able to rack up something like 200,000 points on your frequent flyer card by doing certain kinds of smart things, right?
Exactly.
Right, so it's really
that's something that can be earned really easily, yeah.
Very accessible. This is so exciting. I mean, I'm actually learning stuff now that I didn't know. I'm thinking, hey, this is really great. So talk to me a bit about logistics, passports, visas, that kind of thing. Do you convert to local currency? What can you tell us about that, Shell?
So if, for any listener out there, if you don't have a passport, get it, just get it, just get it, just get it, just get it.
Right.
You never know when you'll have the opportunity, and it's really sad if the thing that stands in your way is a 4-week process to have your passport sent away. They last for a decade, so you can get one now and you hold on to it for the next few years. Visas, it depends on the country. I mean, anytime you go on a trip, that's something that you can look up, and oftentimes if a visa is required, the airline will actually ask you at booking because some of them, for instance, Brazil can be done, I think, I'll be speaking out of turn. Some of them can be done automatically with through the airline. Some of them require you to go to the consulate and kind of submit paperwork. But they do often run in the $100 to $150 range, so they can cost an extra money on top of your trip. That's something to be careful about. I'd love to hear what Brian thinks in terms of the implications of that when you're stringing together multiple countries in one big trip, like his around the world. There's one more thing you said, passports, visas, and the third one, I actually, currencies. Generally, I do not travel with a lot of U.S. money and convert. I think the conversion fees back and forth just waste your money. And if you take too much and you convert, then you have to come home and reconvert it, and it may be difficult if the currency is not a popular one, like a euro. So generally what I do is carry enough cash, $100 or so, $200, U.S. dollars, just so I have it for safety's sake. But then I go to the ATM machine and directly take out money in that currency. And as long as you double-check with your bank that they don't charge extra fees, and every bank is different, but it's actually cheaper to do that than it is to trade it at a currency exchange.
Wow. Okay. Excellent advice. Brian, what can you add to that, please?
Well, I just wanted to say that Shell and I have been going back and forth in the chat room posting up links. So there's actually a link I posted in there about visa requirements, and it shows what country citizens have certain requirements for certain other countries. And again, the Internet, again, makes this information so easy to find that there's really no excuse if you really want to go out there and do it. So I posted a link up. It's called visahq.com, and it lists out all the visa requirements. If you're a particular citizen of a certain country, you can find out what the visa requirements are for another country. So, again, all this information is it's pretty much online nowadays. In terms of money, what I do is for big ticket items, let's say like airplane tickets or car rentals or whatever, I use a credit card. And then for anything small, I use an ATM card because when you do money conversions, let's say at the airport money conversion is such a ripoff because the fees are so high, you get a better rate for your conversion via the ATM machine. So you definitely want to do that when you're traveling abroad. Don't do it at the airport. ATMs are worldwide, even in the most, you know, remote part of Cambodia or, you know, other countries around the world. You'll find an ATM machine. So avoid the airport exchange or the hotel exchanges and do it via ATM. And for anything else, you know, large ticket items, use a credit card because you also get the insurance that the credit card provides in terms of, let's say, your flight gets canceled or, you know, you can go ahead and dispute the charges if you need to.
Right. Wonderful. And, you know, for folks who might be feeling skeptical about an ATM machine being available just about anywhere you go, I'm going to tell you a brief little story. I actually happened to travel in Kenya for a kind of extended period of time, for about 30 days a few years ago, and took a trip out to Maasai Mara in that area. And there are, of course, Maasai people who live in the area. And as we were driving down the road, I saw a herder herding goats, and I think he had cows. He had cows and goats out there, and I love cows. I don't get enough chance to really see them, so I decided to ask to stop and take pictures of the cows and also take pictures with the herder. So we got out and asked if we could take pictures, and he said sure. He was happy for us to take pictures. And, you know, he's sort of wearing, I'm not sure what the types of clothing are called, but something that you'd see typically of a person who is out there and who's herding. Unfortunately, I have the word kanga in my mind, and a kanga is something that a woman wears. I don't remember right off the top of my head what the men wear, what it's called. But, you know, he was wearing this, and so he looked very sort of stereotypical National Geographic kind of thing. And then his cell phone rang. And I was like, oh. And when I opened my eyes and looked around, there were cell phone towers. And when we went into the local town, sure enough, there was an ATM machine. So, you know, the world is not as remote as it used to be. And, you know, it's absolutely true that most places that you go to, you are going to find a lot of the amenities that you might find to be surprising that are available to you. Listen, folks, we have another caller who is on the line asking to be heard, and this is in the 917 area code. I'm going to turn on the mic in just a second here. Caller in the 917 area code, you are on the air. Are you there? Okay, it sounds like we might have had somebody who accidentally pressed the number one, and that happens from that time to time. I want to tell you again, folks, if you want to call in and ask questions of our guests, the number is 818-532-9789. When you call in, it does show that you've called in, but if you want to be on the air and ask a question, then you hit the number one. Please don't hit the number one if you don't want to be on the air. Because it gives me a signal here on the switchboard that you want to be heard if you press the number one. So be careful about pressing the number one once you call in. But feel welcome to call in and ask any questions that you have. To my guests, we talk a little bit about safety, about pickpockets and that sort of thing. I want to talk a bit about being prepared for emergencies. Unfortunately, you know, things can change politically in a country. Brian, I remember that your trip was really exciting when you were in Thailand, for example, and all of a sudden there were questions about having to evacuate. So I want to talk a little bit about being prepared for that kind of eventuality. Brian, can you tell us a little bit about what happened with you and what kinds of things you learned about your experience?
Yeah, Thailand. I was actually in next door in Cambodia, and this is November 2008, and so I was planning to fly through Thailand to get to Hong Kong, and they started protesting, and all of a sudden the airport was closed down. So I had to reroute myself and fly through Vietnam. Which I didn't plan on, and I didn't have a visa for it, so I got kind of scared and wondered if I was going to get stuck in Vietnam because I didn't have a visa, and then eventually made it to Hong Kong. But what we know from things happening in Egypt and Thailand and Japan and all around the world is that you don't know what's going to happen. And what I discovered is that, and what I didn't do on my trip, which I would do now if I had the chance to go back and do it again, would be to register, at least for American citizens, register with the State Department. And what that does is it allows them to know where you are generally. So let's say the worst case happens, what happened in Japan, you have an earthquake, you have a tsunami. The State Department knows, okay, Brian was in such and such area, we have to look for him. Or he wasn't in that area, we can notify his family that he wasn't there, but we'll try to find them. Because remember now, you have the backing, at least for Americans, you have the backing of the United States government behind you. The State Department will try to find you, try to get you out of a situation. And a lot of people don't think about that. They look at the advisories, perhaps, and then, you know, make a decision from there, but they don't go that extra step. And I think registering when you arrive in a country, or even before you get there, is a good thing to do, because you never know what can happen, whether it's man-made or natural. Registering with the State Department is a good thing to do.
Right, right. Wonderful advice there. And, you know, again, we don't want to scare people out of traveling, really. How often do these kinds of things happen? But it is important to be prepared. Shell, is there something that you can add to that?
Sure. And I thank you for sharing that, Brian, because it's actually comforting to know that even in the worst of situations that there's still help. And then I think if we think about other emergencies that aren't necessarily natural disaster related, things like what happens if you lose your passport and if that's your kind of identity, just about every country has a consulate office that you can go to. And one of the things that helps is if you have a copy of your passport. So even if the original gets lost, you should always travel with a printed copy. And as well as what I do and encourage folks to do is to, before they leave, scan a copy and email it to themselves, because you can log into your email account from anywhere in the world and then print a copy and so you'll, or share it with an official who needs to help you. So I think having those kinds of tips to kind of know how to get help when an emergency happens are great.
Great, great. Listen, we have another caller on the line, actually, that I want to come to, also in the 909 area code. And, caller, you're on the air, 909.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I want to know, how old do you have to be to travel around the world by yourself?
So how old do you have to be, or how old should you be?
How old do you have to be?
Okay. Thanks so much. For my guests, either one of you, what can you tell us about age restrictions?
Well, you know what? Considering that we have kids who are traveling around the world on sailboats, I don't know if traveling around the world on a plane is any different. So it's really up to you and, you know, your guardians or parents to decide that. But, you know, the ability is there. And again, we have, you know, young people, teenagers traveling around the world on sailboats. So, you know, that's really a question for you and your family, but anyone can do it.
Wonderful. Shell?
I know that technically, I should say absolutely to what Brian just said, because what I'm about to say, I don't want to discourage it at all. I think the age technically, at least in the U.S., to travel alone is somewhere around 14 or 15 years old. Children travel at much younger ages by themselves if their parents choose to, and they also have the option to say, my child is this is a minor traveling alone, and then the airline actually helps get you from place to place. I can imagine that trying to leave the country without some parental input might be more difficult, but I think that might be something that can be worked out in advance with an airline and having it documented that my parents are okay with this.
Right.
And so, yeah, I would definitely not say that, oh, it's not for me because I'm not old enough yet. I think it's if you're really interested or you know someone who's really interested, it's worth looking into.
So let me ask the caller, can you tell us how old you are?
I'm 6 years old. Can I go by myself?
Well, I'm not sure about that, but let me ask my guests. What do you guys think about that? We've got a very precocious 6-year-old who's on the line who wants to know when she can travel by herself.
I love the spunk, but I don't know about six.
I think that sometimes it can be a bit, not hard, but an interesting process of kind of having to stand in line with your passport and make sure everything's with you and taken care of. And at six, you might actually appreciate having someone a little older to help out with that. So, but I don't know. What do your parents think about it? Have you asked them before?
Yeah, my mom won't let me go.
No. But guess what? The great thing is every single day you're getting just a little bit older. So before you know it, you'll be traveling and we'll be listening to you on the radio.
Thanks.
Absolutely. Well, caller, thank you so much for asking such a very important question. And it was a question that I hadn't thought to ask, actually, because, you know, there are people of all ages who want to travel, and I know that you may be eager to get started in traveling. You sound like a person who is, you know, really curious about the world and wants to see other places. At the moment, it seems like you're going to have to work things out with your parents and try to get them to take you on trips. And as Shell mentioned, you might really actually appreciate having a grown-up with you who can, you know, take care of the things like standing in line and getting your passports and all that kind of thing so that you can just sit back and enjoy the trip. I was a traveler when I was pretty young myself. I think I was 14 years old when I went on a trip to Singapore and Hong Kong, and we also went to Thailand. We went to Bangkok. And so I was part of a tour that was part of my school, and I was 14. But, you know, what was really great was that I didn't have to worry about any of the details. My teachers and the chaperones who were on the trip with us took care of all of the details, and all we had to do was just enjoy the trip. So for now, I'm thinking that it's okay for you to be traveling with other people who can look out for you. And as soon as you get old enough, you get your passport and get your ticket and fly, okay? Thanks again for calling in, and thanks to my guests for providing answers to that really important question. We are doing quite well on time, actually. We've got about 30 minutes left in the show. I wanted to talk a bit about finding out more about the countries that you're going to. So you mentioned that there are a lot of resources and you've been putting out resources. Is there a particular resource or a book that you've found to be especially useful? I know that Lonely Planet, for example, is really popular with some people. What resources might you suggest?
For finding out about particular countries, you know, when I was planning my trip, I spent a lot of time in the library in Barnes & Noble just looking at, you know, some of the, you know, the different books, and everyone had a different perspective. But I think, again, the Internet, coming back to the Internet again, you really get real-time, you know, up-to-the-date information by going online. So, in particular, not only Lonely Planet, but all these other websites, the user forums where people talk about their trips, they talk about locations, is really important. So, if you go to, like, a major, you know, book publisher, let's say Lonely Planet or Moon or any of these other publishers, they usually have forums online, and you post a question up. You say, you know, how was Bangkok in the summer? How was, you know, Kenya in the fall? Or what should I do, X, Y, Z? I think that is really the most up-to-date information. And then also using social media, using Twitter, using Facebook. You know, if you post a question up on even on LinkedIn, and if you have a good mass of people who your friends or colleagues online, you got a lot of various answers and connections to other people. So I keep going back to the Internet, but because it's so valuable, you have to use it. Utilize all those resources and really crowdsource your information, meaning get information from a whole bunch of different people who are there already or who have been there recently. And it's a lot the information is more up-to-date than a book that may have been published a year ago.
Shell, if you could come in on that too. Thank you, Brian. That was a great answer, of course. And what can you say about this, Shell?
Sure. I agree with Brian in terms of the forum groups. Fodders is a guidebook company, but they have a great forum group as well. And I found that a lot of locals participate in it. So I've even asked things about, you know, what should I wear? I don't want to stand out as an American. And so what are styles like there? What are women wearing? What do shoes look like so that I can buy things here that will minimize kind of how I stand out? And so locals can tell you those kinds of things, or they can give you a real insight into a hotel, because you know that you might not be able to get in some other way. So I often go to Fodders when I have questions like that. And then also TripAdvisor, we know them mostly for hotel reviews, but they often do a list of sort of the top excursions or sightseeing places in a location, and you can quickly begin to see which ones are more tourist traps as opposed to the things that people really appreciate, because people are giving that same kind of honest, sometimes hypercritical feedback on, you know, an excursion as much as they do to a hotel. But yeah, I think the internet, and the last thing really quickly, is sometimes people who live locally just will have a website that's much more interesting. So it won't be anything that we know by name right now, but you know, if you type in Athens, Greece, you know, you might get a website from some guy there who's just passionate about helping people come to Athens. And in fact, I know that site exists because I use it. But so I think just web searches in general are just important.
Fantastic. Well, I'm going to actually add to that about web searches being important. I've been reminded now of a story that happened to me when I took a trip to Kenya. I've taken a couple trips to Kenya. This is on a different trip to Kenya, where I arrived and the folks who I was visiting there, of course, speak Swahili, and we overheard a couple who I believe they were from Australia. It was an Australian couple who had a copy of Lonely Planet with them, and they were trying to find a hotel that was recommended in the book in Lonely Planet. And this was a number of years ago, but they were trying to locate this hotel, and you know, of course, a bunch of people had come up offering to drive them, and companions who understood Swahili overheard the drivers discussing the fact that this hotel didn't exist anymore, but they were going to try to figure out a way to get as much money out of these folks as possible. So we stepped in. And we decided to help them out, and so I told them in English what it was that was going on, and we ended up sharing a room that evening. I took them home to my host, and they had surprise visitors that night. So it demonstrates to me that books are great, but they can be out of date. So it is important to go online and get the updated information. Sounds like you might have been having a little bit of an echo there in the chat room. Can you let me know what the sound is like for you, if you were getting anything like an echo? All right. I wanted to ask, from a technology standpoint, I was getting a little bit of an echo. How's the sound for you guys?
Oh, that's better.
Good. Okay. So we took care of that. But yes, so it's important to go online and get the most up-to-date information. All right, folks, we're going to take another little break, and when we get back, I'd like to talk about etiquette. We sort of touched upon it a little bit. Shell, you talked about folks being able to ask local people what do people wear and you know, what to expect as far as that is concerned, but I'd like us to dive more deeply into the issue of etiquette when traveling abroad. So we're going to be back in just a moment. You're going to be listening to Michelle Webb. The piece is called Beeswax, and it is from her CD, DC Istanbul. We'll be back in just a moment. Wonderful. We are back on the show. You are listening to Untangled Resolutions broadcast of The Problem is the Answer. And Untangled Resolutions is a private practice in relationship coaching and divorce mediation. In mediation, you decide what fair is. Settle your issues out of court where you are the judge. Contact me at info@123untangled.com or visit my website, www.123untangled.com, to learn more about my practice and what mediation can do for you and your family. And I am Batabile Mutombini. I'm a mediator and relationship coach, and I'm broadcasting live from Harlem, USA. We've had a wonderful show today. I'm talking with my guests, Shell Roberts and Brian Peters, who are world travelers and travel bloggers, who have provided us with a ton of really important information about how to plan vacations, how to plan international travel, and how to do so on a budget. So they really are demonstrating that you don't have to be rich in order to travel, and they are also letting us know about the richness of travel. So it's important to get out there and see the world. Your microphones are on, both of you, so if we could come back to the show. I'd like to talk a bit about etiquette, travel etiquette across the world. You know, here in the United States, we have our own norms, expectations for what is considered polite behavior, and that can be really different around the world. And I know I have people listening from around the world as well. And if anybody happens to be awake who is not in the United States, I'm happy for you to call in. You can Skype in and perhaps share a little bit of your perspective on that. But let me start with Brian this time. Tell me a little bit about what you've learned about etiquette in international contexts.
Etiquette is just a matter of respect for a culture when you travel. Because just like you said, some things that may seem normal to us may be odd abroad and vice versa. And this is really just a matter of doing a little research, you know, doing a little reading, just to find out. For instance, in Thailand, it's not polite to put your hand on someone else's head. It's considered impolite. The head is considered holy and sacred, so you don't put your hand on someone else's head. You know, just little things like that. Hand signals in parts of Europe can be offensive. You know, these little things that, you know, a little time out to do a little research could really be the difference between having a great trip and getting along with everyone or, you know, offending someone and, you know, having something happen. So, but for the most part, I think, you know, when you travel and people realize that you're not from there, they tend to give you a pass. They tend to be like, okay, this person's not from here. Let me give them a break. But, you know, I think you learn your lesson once, but you don't repeat the same thing over again. But I think even with that, learning the local language and not learning it to be fluent, but just learning a couple of words really endears you to the local people because they say, okay, at least they're trying. You know, you don't have to speak Spanish fluently to visit Peru, but you know, a couple of words. And if you butcher the words, that's even better because they can laugh and say, hey, at least that person is trying and, you know, they're willing to help you out, they're willing to talk to you, they're willing to assist you. So I think being open and, you know, being as respectful as you can, as much as you can possibly know in a short period of time, it's always, always helpful.
But, you know, two things that you've brought up are so absolutely true to my own experience. One is that people give you a pass. You know, they understand that you don't understand the local customs and local culture. And what they're looking for you to be willing to try and to listen when they perhaps give correction or give suggestions for how you might integrate yourself better into the culture that you're visiting. I know I experience it myself with my own name. So I am very appreciative of people trying to pronounce my name. And I really, if you butcher it to pieces, it's okay. I've learned to answer to just about anything. But it's the fact that you have the respect or enough respect to actually try. So, you know, that can go a long way. Shell, what has been your experience?
You know, I think travel really begins in your heart and that we should all be trying to cultivate the spirit of global sensitivity and cultural sensitivity. So when we can do that and sort of practice that and make that a way of being, it makes our traveling outside, away from home, a lot easier. You know, yeah, I grew up in the East Coast and I live in the Midwest and my family's from the South, and we love to make fun of accents, right? So it's kind of, as Americans, we have such a large country. We're proud of our regional differences, and we rib others for being different. So we don't necessarily, despite the fact that we're this kind of blended society, we don't necessarily embrace cultural differences as much as we should. And I've found that doing that here, watching international films where there's subtitles and not just kind of an American movie where everybody speaks English, is a subtlety, but it helps us practice that sensitivity. That's been kind of my experience, is because when you begin to listen at that point, then once you go into another country, you're already more sensitive, you're already in listen mode, and not let me insert my culture on you.
You know, you're so right, and bringing this subject up brings up another story that I have. When I was traveling in Thailand, when we were in Bangkok, I actually had to find a Western Union while I was out there, and got some directions from the concierge at the hotel, hopped on a tuk-tuk, of all things. If any of you have ever been on a tuk-tuk, that is a death wish, let me tell you. Hopped on a tuk-tuk. The guy went against traffic. I mean, it was just the wildest ride. But he took me to this place, and I think it might have been a post office. I wasn't even sure where it was. But I walked in, and I tried in English, to say, please help me. I'm kind of lost. Can you help me find whatever place I was looking for, the Western Union? And, heads were kind of shaking. Nobody was sort of making eye contact. And I said to them, as I was turning to leave, I said, Sawadika, which is the way that a woman says hello or goodbye. It's a greeting that is in Thai. And all of a sudden, their heads came up, their eyes lit up, and they knew where I needed to go. that was one really stark example of how much it can mean to know just a couple of words. In Kenya, I made sure to understand how to say thank you and hello and goodbye and ask for the bathroom. You know, those are the key phrases. So learning a little bit of the language can go a long way, and I'm sure you've both experienced that, right?
Absolutely.
And,
absolutely.
Even when you make mistakes, that's when you'll never forget what those words mean. You know, you might not realize you slaughtered it in the moment, but when you reflect later, you never forget. I remember being in Spain and intentionally asking, I'm a vegetarian, is there meat in the salad? And it took me 2 days to realize I asked her, was there soap in the salad? You know, I'm sure that lady somewhere to this day is still talking about me. 12 years later. She was like, I don't understand. No entiendes. No entiendes. So, and I was like, soap, don't you understand? It's soap. So I think it helps the communication process, but at the same time, I will never make that mistake again, and it helps you kind of learn more when you try.
What have you found to be the attitudes toward Americans, since so many of my audience are Americans? I'm, of course, sensitive to the fact that I have an international audience, but you are Americans traveling, so both of you would be sensitive to that. What have been your experience traveling specifically as Americans?
Go ahead, Brian.
I'm so sorry. I should have led on that. Let's go with Brian.
Okay. I was going to say that, for all of the news media that we see of, flags burning and death to America, I've traveled through, Egypt, through Morocco, South Africa, Ethiopia, all these countries where, people are scared to go and they don't want to go. And part of the reason that I took my round-the-world trip is because I wanted to see it for my own eyes. I wanted to not be filtered by, the media lens. And what I found is that most people are just like you and me. They believe, they care about their kids. They want their kids to be happy. They want their homes to be happy. And they see you as an American, okay, but they also see you as a human being. And I personally didn't have any problems traveling. In fact, it was rather funny because I was traveling when Barack Obama got inaugurated, when he was first elected, and then when he was inaugurated. I was in Paris for the inauguration, and I was actually in Tokyo during election night. And, you know, it was like, oh, you know, USA and this, that, the other. And I found that the media lens is tilted a certain way, and to really experience the world, you really have to get out there and see it. It's great to look at all the shows and look at the news, but that's not the real world, so to speak. Most people just want to go home and take care of the kids and be happy in life, and most people won't have any problems hitting the road.
Thank you for that. Right. Okay, Shell, what can you add to that?
I agree. I have to say what's happening here in our country politically does sometimes influence the reaction you get. I remember doing a work-related trip for a couple weeks abroad, and I have to say I got a lot of really tough questions. But I realized, even though it made me feel uncomfortable to kind of talk about these things at first, that it wasn't coming from a spirit of hatred or a desire to do something evil to me, that really there was a curiosity and a lack of understanding, because they're getting, people outside of our country are getting small snippets of our news. You know, international news tends to be more balanced, but it's still a small snippet, and they don't know what it's like to really be here.
Right.
And so they question it, and they want to know. And so I've had many conversations in Europe and Africa questioning that. And at the same time, particularly I remember during the Bush years when the sentiment internationally wasn't as strong for him. But at the same time, I remember being in Europe and having a similar experience to Brian with sort of this curiosity and pride about Barack Obama's, you know, position. So I think whatever it is, whether what's happening politically is positive or negative or neutral, that it does influence the kinds of questions you get, but generally it's coming from the right place.
So both of you are saying then that, generally speaking, your experiences have been really positive. And Brian, you mentioned South Africa, and of course that is a country that is near and dear to my own heart personally. But you talked about images that folks have of places being dangerous and you know, not wanting to go there because of the news of crime rates and that sort of thing. So I'm really glad that you brought that up as well. You know, my understanding is that you just have to keep your wits about you as you would in any place. And I'm wondering,
right.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say that's absolutely true. And, you know, when I told friends and family, you know, I was going to go to Ethiopia, they were like, Ethiopia, you know, isn't that where all the starving kids are and flies on people's faces? And I was like, no. And, you know, I'm glad I went because, you know, I was in Addis and, you know, the cafes and people bustling and, you know, people working and living. And, again, we get a certain image from our media, but you also have to remember that people internationally get a certain image from their own media. So,
right.
I think that the more that people travel, the more people can understand each other. And, you know, I think getting down and sitting down and talking with someone from America as opposed to, you know, getting potentially propaganda or whatever from your local government is a lot different. So travel is good in that sense also. It brings us together.
Yes, absolutely. And, yes, that's really important. Brian, I think you said earlier that you discovered that people are basically the same wherever
mm-hmm.
you travel. I want to ask a specific question about equipment, if you will, when you're traveling. Brian, I know when you traveled, you sort of had a backpack kind of situation going on. You traveled really, really light, so I don't know that you even had any checked luggage. And, Shal, I'm not sure what you've learned about how to travel, but let me start with you, Shal, especially being a woman. Women are notorious, I guess. Maybe it's a stereotype, it's an unfair one, but, you know, for having a lot of bags. So talk to me a bit about how you pack.
Okay, so first, I am a do-not-check-your-bag kind of person. Once I land, I like to get, whether it's coming home or going to someplace new, I like to get where I'm going to get and not waste an extra hour in the airport. And life is just easier that way. Secondly, not having all that to carry. What I realize is here in the U.S., we're so spoiled by having taxis that are pretty affordable, waiting for us and taking us curb to curb, and we barely ever have to touch our bags. And so we do have the luxury of packing ungodly amounts of stuff. But I found internationally that's not always the case. It's often much cheaper to hop on a train or a bus, and when you're carrying loads of crap, for lack of a better word, that it's so much more cumbersome and frustrating and uncomfortable. And so I learned early on my first solo European trip, and I actually only had a backpack and a suitcase, but it was a really big suitcase. I learned early on to pack light, and that message has been reinforced several times. To get at the woman question, though, it is tougher. We need hair care products. We need, I don't know, girly stuff. And guys can, like, flip their underwear inside out and keep it moving. The next day, or wash them in the sink, you know. And so I do admit that, you know, Brian has an advantage. But I have learned to find clothes that the material is really light and they rolls and packs well. I've learned to figure out what toiletries I can live with. I wear my hair natural hair, so, you know, I'll carry my hair products, but I don't need a toothpaste. I don't need certain soaps. There's a lot of stuff I can buy and use and toss before I come home to keep my bad light.
Excellent. Wonderful. And Brian, talk a little bit about how you travel.
I completely agree with everything she said, and even for a more practical reason, because the airlines are charging you for overweight baggage, for your checked items. So that's even beyond the convenience and less aggravation of having, you know, heavy baggage or a lot of baggage, you're saving money by having just a check on and having as little baggage and luggage as possible. So on my round the world, I did a backpack, but I think people realize, or she realized that, you know what, there are laundries everywhere in the world. You can wash things over, folks. So, you know, there's no need to pack a bag for a 2 week, for 2 weeks for a weekend trip. And I think that's what people tend to overpack. And, you know, they get home and they're like, I didn't have to use this. So really cutting down on the amount that you pack saves you aggravation and saves you money.
Right. And I know that for folks who are more, who need more help with that, who want more specific information, I'm sure that both of you on your blogs or have links to other people's blogs where they talk specifically of that. Brian, I remember when I was exploring your website way back when you first put it up, that there was a contributor to your blog who talked about how she packed and, you know, having one pair of shoes for this and another pair of shoes for that and, you know, basically, you know, two pairs of pants and a couple of shirts, and that was basically what you need. So you're right. You can wash your stuff. Make sure to choose your fabrics wisely. Any word on fabrics?
Fabric material, but also color, is really important. One really great way to pack light is to pick two colors, you know. That can be very boring, particularly for women who may want to kind of have a different look. But if you make everything some variation of brown and beige or black and beige, then all of your pieces mix and match really easily, and you use things like scarves and jewelry and hats or whatever, accessories, to then bring life into your outfit. But then your basic pieces are easy. And that means you don't have to have as many shoes because you're only matching to one or two colors. And then in terms of fabrics themselves, things that you can wash and that can dry really quickly. So cottons generally don't dry as fast as blended materials. And thinking of things that are light, that pack small, and that don't wrinkle are also really good things to pack.
Wonderful. Excellent, excellent advice. This actually, you know, asking this question has been specifically helpful to me. I will make sure to remember that. And in fact, I'm making a note to myself to go out and check for more information about how to pack lightly. I know, Brian, especially being that you were gone for as long as you were, having just a backpack and, you know, doing quite well with that, proves that one does not have to carry a lot of luggage with them when they travel.
Nope, absolutely, absolutely. Right. And actually, I posted up a video either last week or the week before on my blog where there's a flight attendant talked about how she packs. She packs by rolling everything. And that tends to take up less room, and you know, you can fit everything into a smaller bag. So roll your clothes. Don't fold. Roll.
Roll your clothes. Well, you know what? That actually is going to be sort of the last word on our advice. Believe it or not, folks, we are coming down to the end of the show. So I want to ask both of my guests if they can use about 30 seconds each if they want to give any last words. But it's been a wonderful show, and I thank you both for being on.
Well, thank you. Well, I'm Brian again at NoDebtWorldTravel.com, NoDebtWorldTravel.com. And, again, I just want to encourage everyone that travel is accessible, travel is affordable, travel is safe. And if you have any aspirations of seeing the world, get out there and do it, because you're only getting older, to be perfectly honest with everyone. And, you know, the world is not a big, scary place. Travel is affordable. And if you don't have your passport, go out there and get it. Go to your post office and get your application for the Americans and everyone else. Get your passports also. It's all accessible.
That's a great start. Thank you so much, Brian. Shell, last words.
Yeah, you know, we started off our conversation today talking about the fear. But one thing I wish I had said early on was just dream, you know. What are the places that you saw Budget Travel or some travel magazine and said, oh, God, that's gorgeous, I'd love to go there. And so I say just dream, just research, look up the stuff. Who cares if you don't have the trip actually planned or the money right now? Just collect as much kind of knowledge you can about that place, because it'll all come together. When the money's there and the timing is right, you'll already have that the desire kind of started. And then secondly, I think what we talked about earlier about practicing, developing and practicing the spirit of cultural sensitivity, you know, get out of your comfort zone when it comes to just things you do in your own world. I mentioned in passing earlier about going and seeing international films. Netflix has a gazillion of them. Film festivals come to every major and minor city. And just you know, take, if you're curious about a language, get a language study program, and just constantly every day or every week have some part of your life that's exposure to another culture. I think it will feed your desire to travel more, it will make you more sensitive, and it'll just make you a better world citizen because you have this extra knowledge about someplace other than your own home area.
Wonderful, wonderful. Thank you so much. That's fabulous advice. We're coming down to the last few seconds of the show, so I want to, again, thank everybody for listening to the show. I hope that you found that it was useful to you. Let me know, info@123untangled.com. I'd love to hear from you. And join us again next week. We have another wonderful show set up for you, and I'm going to go ahead and put up the information about that show later on in the week. You can find it on Facebook and also Twitter and LinkedIn. So thanks again for joining us in the show. We're going to finish the show with Michelle Webb again. The piece is called My Brother, My Friend, from her CD, DC Istanbul. And have a wonderful week, everyone. Talk to you later.
Introduction. Feel like the alone is huddled. Thank you.
Thank you.